Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
I'm Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are talking about the 12th episode of Season 4, the 59th episode overall. Have yourself a Morlock Little Xmas.
Indeed.
The Xmas Christmas episode on X-Men has arrived in late May of 2018. This is an episode I don't have many memories of. I'm sure I've watched it a few times, but I just... So, like, rewatching it today kind of felt like the first time for me in a billion years.
Yeah, I remember seeing this come on sometime when it was, like, not near Christmas at all, in syndication or something, probably, and just, like, turning it off because I was like, it's not Christmas right now.
Right. But this episode written by Larry Parr and Eric Lewald. Eric Lewald, a friend of our show, he is the author of Previously on X-Men. He was on, I think, episode 14 with his wife, Julia, who also wrote for the show. Mm-hmm. He was one of the head writers of the X-Men series. I think he was, like, one of the main executive producers, at least in charge of the script development. Mm-hmm. So this is, it's cool to see his name in the actual writing credits.
Yeah.
This was a fun episode. Like I said, I had not many memories of it, but I enjoyed watching it here. I was especially surprised how it expands on the X-Men lore in a way I did not expect. Not in some major way, but little details here and there. So,
okay. Yeah, we'll find those along the way.
Yeah. The animation here, while not terrible yet, maybe still a little bit lacking. The show's getting a bit more slapdash as we barrel on towards the finish here.
I actually thought the animation was still fine in this episode. The storyline wasn't something that called for, like, really big, surprising, sweeping animation like we've seen in some of the other, like, more action-packed episodes. So,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't, like, a standout animation episode, but it was good.
Yeah, what else do I want to say about weirdly an episode that features the entire cast for a change?
Well, sure, it's Christmas.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to be together.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, in most of these episodes, we've seen many of the cast just not present. They're away doing things.
Yeah.
So, but not in this episode. In this episode, they're all primarily together. Not entirely, but you see everybody.
Right.
So that's an interesting point right there. So the episode opens with Rogue, Cyclops, and Jubilee all singing around the enormous Christmas tree in the beautiful X Mansion, which I want to emphasize is very large and warm and filled with food and comfort.
Probably multiple unused rooms.
Yeah, probably dozens of unused rooms. Just keep that in the back of your hat for the time being. So they're all singing Christmas carols. Wolverine is being really grumpy, sitting in a chair by the fire, very annoyed about the very concept of Christmas. Mm-hmm. In this episode, I don't think they really get to the bottom of why he is against Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen in a previous episode that Wolverine has Christian roots or Christian religion in the Nightcrawler episode. So it's not, I don't think it's so much that's the issue.
He's just a grump.
Yeah, he's just a grump. He's your classic Christmas grump. So talking about X-Men lore, Jubilee lets loose an interesting factoid, if not a bit bizarre, where she says this is her first Christmas with the X-Men, which lends itself to some interesting questions.
About our timeline here?
Yeah, so have the past 3.5 seasons all taken place in less than a year? I mean, obviously it's had to.
Yeah.
So the X-Men are really cramming multiple seasons of a television show in less than a year's time. And which, you know,
they've been busy. They get up to a lot of adventures.
That's true. And they all haven't looked like they've aged a day. So also accurate.
Yep.
You know, in most TV shows, each season represents a whole new year, obviously. But in the X-Men universe, it's only we don't even know when she joined the X-Men exactly, either, when we first saw her. We don't know what month.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't even know how many if it's even been a year yet with Jubilee.
Right.
But still, I found surprising that everything we've seen up to this point, the Dark Phoenix, the Phoenix Saga, Beyond Good and Evil, saving the world from the Sentinels, time traveling, Wolverine's past, aliens, it's all taken place in less than 1 year. It's been quite a ride for the X-Men. So in that sense, it's good that they get to relax with a nice, warm Christmas celebration.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's a funny episode. It's actually, the humor is really good, I found. Gambit is cooking with Jean in the kitchen, and Gambit, at first they're making it seem that that Jean Grey has done all the cooking, and Gambit's just trying to help.
Right.
He's trying to spice things, but Jean Grey, I keep calling it Jubilee, Jean is furious with Gambit trying to even offer a hint of a suggestion of help. Like, she's more furious than we've seen her as the Dark Phoenix, which makes kind of no sense. But I do like seeing Jean play a different note than what we normally see from her, which is very placid and calm and friendly.
Cool and collected.
Yeah, in the kitchen, she's kind of a terror.
Yeah.
And by the end of the episode, I'll jump to the end, we see the fruits of their labor. It's kind of bizarre because Gambit has actually been doing cooking, too.
Uh-huh.
He's made all these French meals. And for whatever reason, they have to save the meals for the next day. And Gambit's furious that he says, you can't reheat this food. Uh-huh. You know, whatever. I forget what French stuff he cooked, like an oyster loaf or something. And,
Cajun. It's Cajun cooking.
Yeah. And along the way, Jean refers to Gambit in a very angry, like borderline racist way as a swamp rat.
Uh-huh.
Not at all with a hint of joking.
No.
Like, so she just cannot... I don't know what happened between them in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I mean...
Serious kitchen drama.
Yeah. I guess Scott is, you know, does not have to be jealous at all of Gambit, you know, possibly having any kind of connection with Jean. She just downright hates that guy. So that's a very bizarre plot point. Beast is in his lab mixing chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unclear as to what he's doing. And then he's like eating his chemicals and tasting them. And I think he's trying to make like a special eggnog or something. But I don't think it's ever clearly said exactly what he's making.
Well, he says something about like, even though it's non-alcoholic, this is a great Christmas drink or something like
right,
that.
Right, but I don't think he says
eggnog. I don't think
eggnog.
He's mixing chemicals. He's saying...
Well, they're in his beakers and they're bubbling over Bunsen burners and things.
Yeah, so he's... I don't know. I thought it was like juices and things.
Why is he making juice in his lab on Christmas Eve?
He's trying to make a special mocktail, I guess, because he makes a point of saying that it's non-alcoholic.
That's the first time I've ever heard the word mocktail before. Yet I instantly knew what you were talking about. So for some reason, that's what Beast is up to.
He's contributing to the Christmas spirit.
I guess. Storm is hanging out with Professor X. Professor X is in his... like James Bond leisure robe in the bowels of the X-Mansion.
Of course.
Storm is wearing her crazy peach-colored dress with turquoise tiger stripes, which actually looks pretty good on her.
But everything looks good on her.
Right, but it is a bizarre dress. You know, Storm's feeling a bit of Christmas ennui as well, because she sees how happy Jubilee is, and it's reminding her of her sad childhood for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of mixed emotions in the X-Mansion house tonight.
Thanks for keeping us abreast of all their fashion choices, too.
And then there's...
It's a little play-by-play here.
Well, I think it's always worth noting. And then there, an alarm goes off. Is the X-Mansion under attack on Christmas Eve? Jubilee wonders aloud.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine is very happy at this. You know, finally some action for him as he's muttering. But it turns out Beast just exploded whatever chemicals he's been cooking. And then he's, like, eating them off his fur. And he's like, oh, it tastes delicious. So that's a red herring.
No, he said he was trying to make, like, a cranberry sauce or something.
Oh, was he? Okay. Yeah. All right. So that was funny. Legitimately funny. I was giggling throughout watching this.
Mm.
I mean, it was stupid and corny, but I don't know. The characters are so well drawn, written.
Yeah.
Any humor you get from them is pretty welcome and earned, I would say.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, them being corny, it's kind of like, insert your favorite talk show host doing a Christmas special being corny, and you just kind of laugh along because, you know, you have this weird intimate I'm not even like a modern talk show host because they're more sardonic, but maybe like Johnny Carson era, you know, when it's just like more like a friendly relationship with the audience, and you allow them to be a little bit cornier because it's Christmas and you've been watching them for 30 years on TV. I feel like the X-Men have earned a certain degree of that status with their audience.
I don't know. I kind of feel the same way about this as I did when it was in syndication as a kid. I was like, oh, all right, a Christmas episode. And, like, I see what you're saying. Like, it's not that it's poorly written or anything like that. It's just, like, it's not Christmas, and it's pretty corny. And, like, aside from the, like, not even the dialogue, just, like, the plot points and the, especially the music that goes along with it is,
Well, you sound like a grumpy Wolverine, and I was able to get more into the Christmas spirit. So anyway, for some reason, you know, that alarm bell reminded me of something else about the X-Men that the movies haven't really captured.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do at times, but not quite so much. In the TV show, they show that the X-Men are, they're kind of like this vigilant police force, or like they're like firemen.
Yeah,
they're always on duty at like 24 hours a day.
Right,
and they're like totally willing to put down whatever they're doing to like jump to the rescue of whatever needs rescuing.
But not all of them at once, usually.
Right. Yeah, they go off on a team. But the point is, like, they've got protocols in the mansion. They've got alarm systems in place.
Right.
And they're like pretty. They run a tight ship.
But do they have a pole?
No, they don't have a pole, but they've got a lot of, like, invisible, like, airlift hangars that appear out of the mountains. But I just find it interesting. Like, that's an aspect of the X-Men that I think is pretty true to the comics, too, that they're kind of, they're like a task force.
Right.
That, they're like, they're not all of them are always happy to jump to action. Some of them are. But the point is, it's like, that's an aspect you don't really see in the movies. Mm-hmm. That, like, it should be more, like, X-Men, like, Team Force Go, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you don't really get that in the movies. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know, it's probably an element that doesn't translate cinematically. I mean, maybe it could. That could be a new tack to take when they eventually reboot the X-Men here.
I think a lot of it, though, is that the storylines that they choose for the movies are often very brooding, and they have, like, a slow build-up to the action, so you get the sense that all of our heroes are preparing for what's coming.
Yeah.
And it's not quite as spontaneous.
But in the show, it's more spontaneous.
Yeah.
And I think that's more fun, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It makes it more like the Ghostbusters.
Right.
They're this crazy, like, almost paranormal force of superpowered people. I mean, I know that's somewhat the Ghostbusters are. But you know what I'm saying? Like, they're just, like, every day, it's like a crazy job they have.
But you don't get as much character exposition that way. Like, it's cool in the TV show because, you know, presumably you've been watching and you kind of know what the backstories are enough to, like, keep up with the storyline. But in the movies, they've probably, maybe not anymore at this point, but in the beginning at least, had to explain a little bit of who all these people were and what was going on. And, like, it'd be a little jarring to just put them right into the action, maybe.
To make them just, like, people that work at the X-Mansion and, like, oh, we have to save the world. Like, everyone put on your uniforms.
Yeah.
So,
wanna, like, stretch out the story a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're doing in the movies. I mean, there's just so much to talk about with their backstories and the drama.
Yeah.
But I think that's, like, I think going forward for whoever's writing the movies, or if they do a future TV show, that's a good way to ground a script.
Uh-huh.
Is to show them, like, they've been in action, and they've set up this world where they're just kind of, like, ready to save the day.
Yeah.
The Avengers, like, they hint at that stuff in the movie, in the new ones. Like, they build that new facility in upstate New York.
Right.
Where presumably they train.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, I don't know, it's like at the end of one of the Avengers movies, I think Avengers 2, they show, like, a new team has been assembled with Vision and Scarlet Witch and stuff, and it's like they're gonna and Falcon, and they're gonna train now.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, and that was, like, kind of start of Captain America Civil War. They're, like, off on some random mission.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like they don't really lean into that. What we're seeing here in this X-Men cartoon. And like I said, it's just like, it would be a new tact, I think, for a superhero movie in general. Show them as, like, firemen or cops, kind of, responding to situations. And not everything has to be so epic and grand.
Mm.
It lends to humor, and it lends to, like a new perspective. So anyway, that thought just crossed my mind watching this episode.
Yeah.
But back to the plot here. So it was a false alarm anyway. But for some reason, Jubilee and Storm want to go shopping on Christmas Eve in New York City. Is that, first of all, do people, is that, we live in New York.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare.
But is that something people do? Do they go out shopping in Midtown?
Yeah, I think people do.
Like, the stores are open, like Macy's and all the,
like,
clothes stores are open on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Is that because people are buying late presents, or it's because, like, is it like a tradition people have that they want to go shopping on Christmas Eve and buy their presents then?
I think both. I don't know. But most people, like, unwrap presents on Christmas morning, right? So they, like, save up their Christmas bonus or whatever they get on Christmas Eve and go, like, get presents for their family. I mean, that's the thing.
I can imagine it was, like, a thing in the 1950s for some reason. Like, you're talking about Christmas bonuses and stuff. Like, I can imagine people back then would get their bonus, like, the week of Christmas or on Christmas. Like, I don't know exactly. I feel like, I mean, I don't have a job that gives me a Christmas bonus. Mm-hmm. I used to. You know. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I don't even know if, like, Christmas bonuses are antiquated in and of themselves anymore.
No, I think it's still a thing that people do.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. But I didn't even know that people... So you think it's a thing, but you've never seen it yourself. You've never gone shopping on Christmas Eve in New York City.
I mean, I've been, like, out and around in New York City on Christmas Eve and been like, oh, my God. Like, every store looks like it's packed to the gills.
Really? Okay.
And it looks like a nightmare to try to, like... buy anything right now.
And that's what Wolverine comments on. He says, are you crazy? Shopping on Christmas Eve?
Yeah, also there's like a lot of tourists in town because it's the holidays and like, you know.
Yeah, tourists. Yeah, that's true. Everyone's yeah, so it's like if tourists are in town, that means the stores are definitely open because...
Yeah, they want to make money.
Yeah.
And they do.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just saying, like, especially the tourists would go shopping. I don't know about people that live in the city so much, but...
I mean,
there's so many tourists, though, that, you know, they would be wandering around. Anyway, so they decide to head into Midtown. They go to a mall. Jubilee buys tons of presents. There's another funny joke where a woman sprays perfume in Wolverine's face, and he is like...
He's so mad.
And like, they don't really go into it, but I can just imagine part of the reason he's so mad is because of his insanely enhanced...
His hyper smell powers. Yeah.
Which, it's like, that has got to be terrible.
Yeah.
If you spray that right in his nose, because he can smell... the juggernaut from a mile away. So. You can't, like, be, like, injecting, like, a scent right into his nostrils at point-blank range. That's a borderline assault. And there's a funny scene where Storm gives him permission to just leave right away, and Wolverine just runs like a little boy out the store. But then, and I thought he was just going home, but no, like, they all meet up at the Rockefeller Center ice skating rink. A nice use of a, like, real location in the X-Men show. Like, they've shown scenes where they've quote-unquote been in the city before, and it did never really look like New York sometimes. Like, sometimes it does. In the Phoenix saga, it looked like they were in New York. In the Dark Phoenix saga, they were definitely in New York. But in other episodes, it looked like, I don't know what city they were in. It looked like a small suburban city somewhere. Like, maybe it was...
Maybe they're in Queens.
In downtown Westchester.
Where Spider-Man lives.
Well, I mean, no. The episodes I'm thinking of, it didn't look like Queens either.
Oh.
But the point is, they're, like, in New York City proper this time.
You like that it's a recognizable landmark.
Yeah, I do. I like that aspect of it. So they're skating around Rockefeller Center. That also must have been tough on Christmas Eve. I think more than the shopping, getting some skates to skate around Rockefeller Center. Like, the line must be...
Oh, yeah, in real life, that's also a nightmare. Yeah. But in the show, it's not a big deal.
Well, I mean, they don't show them waiting in line for 2 hours. That would have been funny, too. Wolverine just complaining. I can't believe you're making me wait in line with all these tourists to go ice skating.
I used to do this for free in Canada.
Yeah, I'm from Canada. And then out of nowhere, their X-Men are in the right place at the right time, you know, in a city of 10 million people.
Mm-hmm.
An ambulance goes flying, like, off the road into the middle of the ice rink. Storm uses her wind powers to gently set it down on the ice rink. Lo and behold, some old Morlock pals are kidnapped it. We see that old lady. I forget all their names, so I'm sorry.
Carjacked it.
Yeah, but that old lady who made spiders appear in Wolverine in the Morlock episode.
Yeah,
she's there, and she looks like an old, like, Eastern European lady.
Uh-huh.
And then her name might be Sarah. I'm not sure. But anyway, and then there's this, like, other guy who's got Mr. Fantastic-esque powers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's never spoken before, but he actually speaks in this episode. He's got, like, a gruff, low voice. And they've hijacked an ambulance. Wolverine is infuriated with them. A lot of anger in this Christmas episode from our characters. They say that they're, you know, the little boy that lives with them, Leech, is sick. Oh, by the way, the Morlocks, if you don't remember, they're the mutant rabble that lives in the sewers that are poor and destitute and sort of, like, shunned from society.
Yeah.
So the boy Leech is sick. Wolverine doesn't believe them for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
He calls all Morlocks liars.
Right, which is, like, weird, because they've had interactions with the Morlocks before, and, like, in the first episode that we see them, it's like, yeah, they're up to no good, but it's, like, a self-preservation thing.
Yeah.
And then they have several more, like, friendly interactions with them afterwards.
Yeah,
so.
They're really more victimized as we've seen them throughout the last three seasons than anything.
Yeah.
Only in the first episode are they any kind of threat to the X-Men. It was all, like, a big misunderstanding for the most part.
Right.
I mean, they were gonna do something evil to, like, Callisto kidnapped Scott because she wanted a boyfriend to make babies with,
right.
Which is bizarre. But other than that, I mean, it was, like, not, they were not to really kill anyone. Wolverine's anti-Morlock stance is quite bizarre because, as we've discussed in the show, Wolverine's as progressive, if not more so, than any other, as anyone in the show. So, he really just seems to, I don't know, he has, like, some kind of weird bias against them. In other episodes, he calls them, I don't know if he, like, directly calls them ugly or smelly or something. He just doesn't like them.
Yeah.
He doesn't trust them for some reason. Seems a bit out of character of him, but whatever. And then they talk about some sad stuff. Like, I mean, this last episode's pretty good. Like, they say they tried to take Leech to the hospital. Leech is, like, a Kermit the Frog type boy. It's got some telekinesis and some other powers. They took him to the hospital, and because his powers are out of control because he's sick, the hospital refused service, and that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
And then they sort of start heaping some guilt onto Storm in explaining this by saying, like, you're supposed to lead the Morlocks, and you never do anything for us. Like, because if you remember at the end of that Morlock episode from season one, Storm challenges Callisto for leadership of the Morlocks, she wins, and she's the leader.
Right.
And she kind of leaves Callisto in charge, but then she never really does anything with them following.
Yeah, right.
But they have, like, in between this episode and the previous one, it has come up before, too, that Storm is the leader of the Morlocks, and that she's kind of, like, not been involved in Morlock activities.
Yeah.
So it's, like, this weird plot point they haven't dropped, and like, and in this episode, they really go after Storm for just abandoning the Morlocks.
Mm-hmm.
They let her have it.
Yeah.
And it's, I find it, like, kind of strange that, the show has this big problem with Storm abandoning the Morlocks.
Well, why'd she take on the responsibility if she didn't want to actually, like...
Well, she didn't really. She said, Callisto, you run this joint. I got to be an X-Men in the surface world.
Yeah.
She offered the Morlocks to live in the X-Mansion, too.
Right.
And they refused.
Right.
They said, we'll only come to the surface when there's peace between humans and mutants, which will never happen, obviously, but... I just found it bizarre that the level to which Storm is guilted over not leading this group of mutants.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a strange plot point here. Anyway, so they head underground to help the Morlocks. Storm senses that they're telling the truth, which is kind of funny.
Right. It just doesn't make sense. That's not her superpower.
Yeah, but I think, you know, she's just using empathy, I guess. And they go into the sewers. Jubilee is, like, piled high with presents. She doesn't want to leave them behind. Jubilee, by the way, has been real excited about this X-Man Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
They get down into the sewers, and the Morlock Christmas looks pretty sad. They've got, like, a dented tin can with a crappy branch, dead branch, that has one broken ornament on it.
Yeah.
A shattered Christmas ball.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this little girl that looks like Leech's sister or something. She's another, like, little frog girl.
Yeah.
I forget her name. It doesn't matter. And she's like, isn't our Christmas tree great, Jubilee? And she's like, oh, yeah, it's the most beautiful I've ever seen.
Yeah, they have a real emotional moment.
Yeah. So the Morlock Christmas is really sad. Again, the X-Mansion is large and warm and kind of isolated. It's not like it's, you know...
Yeah, the Morlocks really wouldn't be, like, subject to public discrimination if they chose to move into the X-Mansion.
The X-Mansion's kind of in the forest somewhere, so, you know, they could have some privacy if that's what they're concerned about.
Mm.
Anyway, we'll get back to that again. Leech is dying. Wolverine hints that he might be able to save Leech, but then he immediately retracts it.
Right.
He's like, never mind, forget I even mentioned it.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre. And they're like, what? What do you mean? Like, and everyone's like, oh, you're mutant healing blood, obviously, right?
Yeah.
We should do transfusion right now. He's like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
And then he kind of lets it out that in his long life, like, he's tried 20 transfusions with different people. and most of them have died, with the exception of two.
Right.
And I think he even mentioned that, like, little kids have died as well.
Yeah.
So I guess it's, like, a really touchy subject for him. It's too emotional.
I mean, I guess, but it's, like, he himself assessed the situation and said that if we try to move him up to, like, the X-Mansion or a hospital or something, like, he's gonna die, so we can't. So then it's like, you're out of options, buddy. Like, either you do this transfusion, or he's gonna die anyways, so...
Yeah.
Like, why would you not just try, you know?
And he doesn't want to try, and Storm, like, yells at him about it, and then I think in that moment, Wolverine gives Storm shit for not leading the Morlocks, too.
Yeah, he does.
She's like, these people are your responsibility, you've done nothing for them.
Right.
And then...
Storm is, like, not phased, she doesn't bat an eyelash.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, Storm, like, really does not...
She just ignores all these comments.
Yeah.
Good for you, Storm.
I guess. I don't know. We'll conclude that plot point in a second here.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, we learn more details in the Morlock Christmas. It's really sad. They're just eating, like, tomato soup, whereas the X-Men have this insane feast.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they decide to go with the blood transfusion anyway, because of course they would. Beast is called to come as the doctor. It's going to take him 10 minutes to get there. I thought... never mind. Let me see what happens next. I'm sorry. Then, Leech is okay. Beast arrives, like, after the transfusion's over. He arrives just to say that Leech is fine.
Yeah.
So Beast does nothing, like many characters in this episode. And he has some insane, like, comment, like, dutiful Aeneas returning to Rome. Leech will be okay. I'm not sure what that's a reference to. Probably some more Shakespeare or something. Or history, but...
Aeneas?
Yeah.
Isn't that from, like, the Iliad or something?
Is it? Okay. Well, no, the Iliad's Greek, right?
Yeah.
It was ancient Rome in Greek.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. So, it doesn't matter. And at this moment, Storm passes her scepter of power to Callisto. So having gotten, like, tons of crap from everybody about not having led the Morlocks and they're all dying without her care, she just abdicates all responsibility.
Right.
Like, it's some...
To the one person that she fought to gain that responsibility,
yeah,
in the first
who's
place.
Who's proved herself not to be, like, a wise leader.
No.
So none of that makes sense. And then, like, Storm, like... It's like I said, to me it seemed like Storm was just giving up, saying, like, I can't deal with these Morlock people anymore. I've not helped you at all once,
right,
to begin with, and I'm just giving this power back. Leave me the hell alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, like, instead of just saying all that, she gives this stupid speech about, like, the constitutional, like, hierarchy of the Morlock culture.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I give the power to the Morlocks with all rights and responsibilities,
right,
for all time and forever now, to Callisto, the deserving heir. It's like, shut up, Storm. You're doing nothing. You've done nothing. You stink as the leader of the Morlocks.
Yep.
So, but that was funny, though. Jubilee, so here's the point where I thought for sure Jubilee was going to invite the Morlocks back to the X-Mansion for Christmas.
Yeah.
To have a nice one in a clean, sanitary house.
A beautiful mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And instead she's like, you guys can have all my presents. They're all mostly food. So, so, like, Leech and the little girl run and open the presents, and they're eating all the chocolates or whatever. And Storm's like, are you sure you want to give away your presents? You know, Jubilee, you were so excited about them. Like, really, Storm?
Yeah.
Jubilee's doing something really nice. Like, you and all the other X-Men have Professor X's gold card, and you could buy whatever you want.
Right.
So, okay, whatever. I think Storm's a little drunk in this episode, the more I think about it. And it's just, it's bizarre. And then they, like, cut back to Jean and Gambit, who are still fighting, and they've got all this food. And I thought, like, oh, well, I guess maybe if they're not coming to the X-Mansion...
Maybe Jean and Gambit are going to, like, pack it up and bring it?
Yeah, and, like, all the X-Men will come to the sewer with the food.
Yeah.
And they don't. They just decide to put it in the fridge for the next day. And Jubilee's just on a cell phone call with Professor X, and he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Stay in the sewers tonight. It's fine. He doesn't think to invite the Morlocks to live at the mansion, to visit. Forget about live there.
Right.
So, and that's just kind of how the episode ends, and I thought the combination of it, of the X-Men having no self-awareness about their role in the misery of the Morlocks' lives,
uh-huh,
and the other, like, nice messages about, like, you know, seeing how the other half lives and materialism at Christmas versus love and stuff.
Yeah.
I thought it was, like, a nice episode. It really entertained me in 2018. What do you think?
I guess I was entertained. Like I said, I think it was like, you know, it was sort of a cheesy one, especially with the music cues and stuff like that. And yeah, those closing plot points kind of didn't make as much sense as they could have.
And it has ends with a nice green text Christmas message where it says, "Happy Christmas from all the X-Men to you, our fans," kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you know, like you said, the writing was good. Like, the characterizations were good. It was kind of nice to have an eye on, like, all the main X-Men at once.
I just thought it was funny, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. It'd be one that if I was doing, like, my own personal binge, I'd probably skip. I'm like, oh, Christmas episode, nothing happens.
Yeah.
But it was actually, I thought it was funnier watching it as a 34-year-old than I would have otherwise thought. It was a nice, like, little palate cleanser between all the heavy drama. And the older I get with entertainment, the more I appreciate palate cleansers in my entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't deal with all the, like, intense, like,
all the seriousness all the time.
Seriousness and nonstop action.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, yes. We saw Solo.
We sure did.
I don't want to, like, go into, like, an insane long rant or discussion about every plot point of it. I just want to briefly talk about it.
Yeah, okay, what'd you think?
I thought it really stunk. I'm an enormous Star Wars fan, you know, and the more Disney keeps releasing Star Wars movies, the more disappointed I'm getting.
Are we going to do spoilers here?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, let's just give the warning of spoilers
just
in case. If
you haven't seen Solo and you're going to go see it, just turn us off and wait to finish the episode until you've seen it.
But I would,
just in case we say something crazy.
But I would say it doesn't matter because this movie sucks. There's nothing to spoil. It's the prequel to the Han Solo character from Episode 4. I mean, it's like,
yeah, right.
It's not like any great revelations.
You mean Han?
Right. Yeah. Right, that's disgust.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was bad. I thought the actors were all good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pre-discussion on the movie was that, oh, the acting was so terrible, they had to hire acting coaches and everything. I was like, oh, boy. But actually, the actors did their best to elevate a terrible script.
Yeah, the script is bad.
It's, like, insanely bad.
The dialogue
bad.
Was, like, kind of insufferable in some parts.
And you've got all these good actors trying their best to elevate it.
Yeah.
And almost succeeding. I mean, like, it wasn't, you know... But if
it
you
was
just,
watchable, though, was the thing. Like, yeah. I was engaged throughout. I think, like, I wasn't expecting too much from this movie, which always helps your movie theater experience.
Right.
When your expectations are low. To me, like, as I was watching this movie, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to keep giving them a chance with these Star Wars movies for too much longer.
I was like, they have to try harder.
Yeah. Like, I really enjoy the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And, like, to me...
There's some cool stuff to see in the movie.
Right. Like, I'm kind of, at this point, just going to see the Star Wars movies because I like the whole universe idea of it. It's just, like, not living up to my expectations and
you know
in
what
terms
they
of, like, plot lines and writing.
Me too. You know what they have to do that they have been reluctant to do for some reason?
Hmm.
I was rewatching today... The original Star Wars.
Yeah.
And...
you had to do a little reset, huh?
Yeah, I did. I needed a palate cleanser. I'm like, ugh, I just saw a bad Star Wars movie. I need to be reminded why I like this.
Yeah.
And as I'm watching it, the music is so good, obviously. John Williams, classic all-time score. And I'm like, just use the original score in these new stupid movies. Because in Rogue One and in the Solo movie, they have, like, play themes of the score or, like...
Yeah.
You know, it's like a subtle take on the score.
It's a variation.
You hear slight melodies sometimes buried underneath another score.
Yeah.
And it's like, the new score just sucks. It just give us the actual score. That's what so much of what makes Star Wars feel like Star Wars. I don't care about how you change the details of the Force or change, like, you know, the lore around. None of that offends me or bothers me in any way whatsoever. But... you put so much effort in making the aesthetics of Star Wars look as accurate as possible with the costumes and the whatever, you know, like real life props.
Mm-hmm.
Half the movie is the music, you know, like just use the original John Williams score, especially if it's a movie set in the era of the first movie like Rogue One and Han Solo are.
Mm.
Just use the John Williams score. It'll just make people feel better. It'll do so much more of the heavy lifting in an otherwise boring, like, crappy movie.
I don't feel that strongly about the music. I feel like what they put in is serviceable. It's fine.
It's so unmemorable.
It's unmemorable, but it, like, captures the same, like, tone.
But in a hollow way. It just used the music, and you'll evoke, and it might be cheap, but you'll evoke the emotions the fans felt watching the original trilogy.
I don't care.
And
so
I'm not saying, in
music.
The new movies, in the episodes 7 and 8 and 9, use a new score, and it is John Williams doing it too, so he can come up with new stuff, that's fine, you know? I'm not saying reuse the score there, but in these spin-off movies, like I said, just use the stupid Star Wars score. That's my personal, like,
I think I don't care
bugaboo.
About it because I feel like it's, like, there's much bigger fish to fry
yeah, well,
than that.
Obviously.
Like, you know, in this movie, it's like, I forget her name in the movie.
Emilia Clarke as
Thandi,
Kira?
No, Thandi.
Oh, Thandi Newton as whoever.
Like, sacrifices herself unnecessarily, like... That did not need to happen.
And that was just pointless.
That was so totally pointless. There's, like, a couple of scenes where Woody Harrison and Han Solo are talking to each other, and, like, there's these other two actresses that are supposed to be, like, female leads, you know, the Marauder girl and what's her name, the girlfriend?
Kira,
yes. You know, and it's really, like, they're, like, off somewhere else, you know? It's like, oh, the men are talking now, so, like, you guys stand far away and speculate about what we're talking about, you know? Like,
I didn't like that Hansel's girlfriend Kira was another English, like, petite English woman with an English accent.
Uh-huh.
That
she reminded
was, like,
me
25.
Too much of the Rogue One accent.
The Rogue One character, I forget her name, too, because that movie is not so great. Who was the...
Daisy Ridley.
Well, Daisy Ridley's good. Yeah. She's the exception.
I thought Daisy Ridley was great.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. Like, I have no problem with Daisy Ridley. And I didn't like The Last Jedi, but Daisy Ridley was the best part of that movie.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah.
But point is, like, there's too many of these, like, English actresses in these leading female roles. Give me... why not a spunky American Princess Leia type?
Or a spunky English woman, that would be fine too.
No more English ladies. Like, it's too much. It's, you know, like,
it's just that, like, the personalities of these
any
characters.
Other nationality, you know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Whatever.
Right, but my point, like, I'm just
like give them something to do, give them a personality, and then I won't care where they're from in real life, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that too. I mean, like, that's, you know, people think that I saw this stupid video essay by this guy. I think his name is Patrick Willems, who actually like his essays for the most part.
Uh-huh.
He does some great stuff on X-Men.
Yeah.
But he had one recently about The Last Jedi. He's like, why do fans hate this movie? Like, fans from my generation, the millennials.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think it's because they're such trivia experts, and when things don't, like, pay off like they thought they would, they're let down because they know what the Star Wars universe is, and when anyone changes it, they're offended by it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, dude. The reason is because the movies just aren't good. Nobody serious cares about if they change the Force in a certain way, or if they change this character relationship, or if they just say, screw it to this preconceived notion you have. They only care if the movie is entertaining and rewatchable and makes sense.
Yeah.
When those things don't happen, you feel, like, let down as far as a customer.
Right.
Just because the movie is, like, bleh. It's not about, like, I don't care that they, you know, give Daisy Ridley new Force powers, or they make her a Mary Sue or whatever. None of that nonsense. None of that appeal. I don't care about that whatsoever.
Right.
I just want the movie to be worth my money.
Yeah.
And so when the movie is, like, lazy and boring, and when there's gaping plot holes, and when the humor isn't funny, or and the dialogue's not memorable, then I feel like the movie's just bad.
Yeah.
And I feel let down. It's like, you guys have this amazing property in Star Wars. You're wasting it. Try harder, Disney.
Right.
Stop. Like, and why do you have to make a Han Solo movie in the first place?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's made that point a million times over.
Right.
But really, like, just do something new, you know, set it in a different time era. Like, give us something else to sink our teeth into. Like, no one, and this is sort of the last thing I'll say about it.
Okay.
Disney made it a fucking point in Rogue One to bring Peter Cushing back to life to reprise the role as Grand Moff Tarkin.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought it was, like, crappy that they did that from an ethical standpoint, to revive a dead actor and digitally recreate him. A lot of people thought it didn't look that good.
Right.
That it looked creepy, you know, that they brought, like, they're trying to show a human being as a CGI.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, like, I actually thought it looked pretty good, and I could tell it was a little stilted, but I was like, okay, I mean, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
I think, like, the performance was bad because it was a robot, you know, that they had to create, essentially. But Harrison Ford is alive. You've done it with all these other Disney movies like Iron Man, where you de-young, you made Tony Stark look younger. You made Robert Downey Jr. look like his 20-year-old self in one movie.
Right.
You've done it with some other characters, too. You did it with Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Mm-hmm.
You made him look like amazingly like he was like 30 years old when he's a 65-year-old man in real life in mm-hmm. one of those scenes, remember?
Yeah.
It's like you've got all this technology. Star Wars is where you're supposed to be pushing the cutting edge of technology. Harrison Ford is alive. Put him in a freaking mocap suit, you know? Like, pay him, like, $50 million, like, whatever his price is. By the way, this is the most expensively made Star Wars movie of all time. It was, like, it cost $250 million to make.
Really?
And that's because they had to do the reshoots when they fired the original directors.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that insane? And they're probably not going to make that money back now. It's, like,
yeah.
a colossal flaming dumpster fire failure.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, so Harrison Ford's alive. Pay him a fuck ton of money and just say, like, we're going to do this experiment. We're going to put all the digital light bulbs on his face, and we're going to de-age him to 25 years old, and we're just going to go with it, you know? It might not work, but, you know, who cares? It's Star Wars. Harrison Ford's alive. Let's have him as a young man.
Yeah.
And just do it. And even if it was a huge, like, crappy failure in that from a special effects standpoint, people would have gone to it in droves for the gimmick aspect.
Right.
They would have had to see what it looks like to see Harrison Ford play himself as a young man.
Right.
And in the role that belongs to him, and it would have been like a milestone in movie making.
Mm.
And I kind of, and you know, he's coming back for Indiana Jones 5 as his 72-year-old self.
Right.
Do that for Indiana Jones 5. Make him young. You know,
yeah.
like he doesn't have to be, and it'll be easier. You don't have to make him 25. You can make him 50.
Right.
You know, you can make him 45. They've proven that they can do it.
Yeah.
And they've got all this fucking money to burn. Like, you know, I don't know why that didn't cross their minds.
Yeah.
I think it's like that. So to me, that's like one of the biggest problems with the movie. Like, this young actor was fine, but
yeah.
he's not Han Solo or Han Solo.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I was like, who cares about this?
Yeah.
So that's my Star Wars rant. I'm sorry. you know, because a lot of my friends who saw it said they enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe I'm just being a stick in the mud, but you didn't like it that much either, it seems.
I thought it was fine. You know, like...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't hate it. Like I said, there were, like, some major plot points that I just was like, ugh, that was,
but
like,
would you,
so dumb.
Would you have a desire to, like, rewatch this again?
Not really, no.
Exactly. That's my point about Star Wars. You're supposed to want to rewatch them 100 times.
Yeah. I guess I'm saying it's fine because it's, like, I wasn't bored during the movie. I didn't have a lot of...
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of my benchmark, I think.
I got bored
for,
at
like,
the end, but whatever.
There are, like, movies that I've gone to where, like, you're sitting in the movie theater and you're just like, should I walk out? No, I paid all this money. I guess I better stay. Like, you know, like when you have that dialogue with yourself, then like it's pretty bad.
I had that dialogue with myself.
You did?
At the end, when they land on the beach scene after the Kessel run is done, spoilers,
uh-huh.
I was like, okay, the movie can just end now. And it didn't. It was like, oh, there's more? All right, fine. And it was just so boring. And like how it resolves is so pointless.
Yeah.
And the big like surprise at the end was so stupid to me. I was a little angry. And it's like, I probably would have been less angry if this was the first one, like Rogue One, you know, where I was like just excited to see another new Star Wars.
Yeah.
But now it's like I've seen, when I first saw First Awakens, I was like, yeah, I really liked it when I saw it in the movie theater. And I saw it twice and I liked it.
Yeah.
I bought it on Blu-ray. I watched it and I was like, okay, now I'm kind of bored. I don't really need to see this again. And then I watched it again on Blu-ray. I was like, all right, now I'm just fast forwarding to the parts I like. And then I'm like, I don't ever want to watch Force Awakens again.
Uh-huh.
That was my evolution then. But at least when I saw the movies, I really enjoyed it.
Right.
But it had diminishing returns. Then what came out next? Rogue One.
Uh-huh.
I saw the movie. I was like, yeah, this is cool. But then I had no desire to see it again. I saw it when it came out digitally,
mm-hmm.
and I on the first digital rewatch, I fast-forwarded through half of it. I was mm-hmm. like, this is boring. I don't care. And I was like, then at the end of that, I was like, I don't really ever want to see this again either. And then Last Jedi came out, I was like, I don't think I like this. and it had nothing to do with, like, all the, you know, the criticisms that people think that people have with The Last Jedi, like anti-feminism, or, you know, like, you just... You didn't like that they changed the core lore of Star Wars? No, I don't care about any of that, like I said.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a movie with huge plot holes and dumb humor.
Yeah.
And it didn't make sense, and it was like a waste. and it was boring, and it was long.
Right.
And then it came out digitally. I actually bought it, because I'm a dumb Star Wars fan, I bought it on YouTube digitally, and I didn't watch it. I still haven't watched it yet. I watched 5 minutes of it, and then I still haven't sat there and had any desire to see it.
Yeah.
And then when this movie came out, I was like, okay, Disney, like I said, enough's enough. Yeah. Like, it's not bad. It's, like you said, it was kind of watchable.
It's not bad, but it's not good.
Yeah, and I'm like, you have to try better. This is Star Wars. It's not, like, you can't make it crappy.
Yeah.
You're just, like, you're giving us too many rotten eggs here.
Right.
And you're trying the audience's patience. You have to just, like, you don't have to be rushing to release them. Take some time off, too.
Yeah, build up the anticipation. They don't need to be, like, every year.
Yeah, you know? Like, make people, like, be thirsty for it.
Right. But also take that time to, like, put a lot of thought and reflection into what you're releasing
and some artistry, you know. Yeah. It's like, it's not about like getting it right so the fans like it. The original Star Wars is good, and like I said, I rewatched it today. It's because it was made by a cool experimental artistic filmmaker,
right,
where it's got like weird mise-en-scene stuff going on and allusions to classic film and interesting cinematography, and you know, it takes experimental chances with narrative and film structure, but it's also a throwback. You know, it's like got a lot like cooking in that way.
Yeah,
it was like it's like a glorified art film. Like, bring some of that back to start. Like, it doesn't all need to be the same. You know, it could let it breathe. Like, it doesn't like in Han Solo. I thought every scene had to have like intense action throughout it.
Right,
and it's like no, it needs to have slow plotting parts where you could breathe a little bit.
Right. And get to know the characters.
Yeah, and show the world in some way where you get absorbed and lost in it, instead of, like, everyone's running from point A to point B constantly trying to do stuff, and, like, things are happening.
Right.
Just, like, make it, like, you know, let us, like, sit in that world a bit and roam around without, like, much going on. Yeah. And let the stakes evolve in a natural pace.
Those are, like, some of the best scenes in the original Star Wars, is when you see, like, Luke on the farm.
Yeah,
where
absolutely.
He grows up. With, like, the sun setting and, like, you just get, like, atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know? There's no dialogue.
And the score is great.
The score is great, but, like, there's nothing really going on.
He's just living on a boring farm with his droids. He's a crappy farmer, and they establish the stakes of, like, his life sucks.
Yeah.
And even back then, it was interesting that they felt like that was a huge risk to take, because they're introducing their hero, like, 20 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
But it works because it's interesting.
Right.
You know, it's almost... I mean, modern TV shows that we really like that are really good do this. They have time to allow characterization to come out in a slower, more natural way.
Mm-hmm.
The Star Wars movie did that. It took that chance, you know?
Yeah.
It took 20 minutes to, like, get on its footing because it was, like, logical.
Right.
And you need to do that sometimes. You can't just be, like, throwing it all in our face and expect us to just go along for this ride. It's tiresome.
Yeah.
So, back to the theme of palate cleansers.
Yeah.
So, Star Wars could use a huge palate cleanser. You know, I don't know when or if that's coming, but whatever. That's all I got this week, Sonia. Do you have any last thoughts on X-Men, Christmas Time, or Star Wars and Han Solo? Han Solo.
Yeah, altogether, this is like a weird podcast episode, huh?
Yeah, well, we're the weirdest podcast on Apple's iTunes.
That's probably not true.
Yeah, probably not. Definitely not.
No, that's it.
All right. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join our Facebook group, X-Men Test Podcast. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes, whatever podcast service you use. And, you know, stay in touch with us. Let us know how you're doing. We love all you fans. We know you're still out there downloading. It's really nice. We're going to continue on here. It's good to be back on track with the X-Men animated series.
Yeah, that's right. We'll see you next week.
All right. May the Force be with you.
Mm.